Hi, you're listening to Humanities Viewpoints, a podcast from the Humanities Institute at Wake Forest University. I'm your host, Program Coordinator Amy Meppam. This past June, the Supreme Court ruled that same-sex couples can marry nationwide, an historic victory for gay rights. While this landmark decision was cause for much celebration, marriage equality is hardly the end of the struggle for LGBTQ rights. This issue and many others will be discussed at Rising Voices, a Wake Forest alumni LGBTQIA conference, which will be held on the Wake Forest University campus October 23rd and 24th. You can register for the Rising Voices conference by visiting lgbtq.wfu.edu/risingvoices. In this month's bonus episode of Humanities Viewpoints, Wake Forest LGBTQ Center Director Angela Mazaris and I discuss the upcoming conference, the founding of the LGBTQ Center at Wake Forest, and her own work on queer public histories. Dr. Angela Mazaris is the founding director of the LGBTQ Center at Wake Forest University, where she also teaches in the Women's Gender and Sexuality Studies program. As LGBTQ Center director, she provides education, advocacy, and support to the campus community around issues of gender identity and sexual orientation. Dr. Mazaris serves as part of the university's diversity and inclusion leadership team and is committed to creating an institution that welcomes, supports, and engages everyone to his or her fullest potential. Dr. Mazaris has a PhD in American Studies from Brown University, where she was honored to hold a Jacob Javits Fellowship from the U.S. Department of Education. Her teaching and research focus on LGBTQ history, queer theory, public history, and gender studies. At Brown, she served as the first coordinator of the LGBTQ Resource Center and as graduate proctor at the Sarah Doyle Women's Center. She was also a member of Brown's Diversity Advisory Board, where she worked specifically on issues related to first-generation students and social class. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure.
So I was wondering if you could just give the listeners a little bit of an overview of the Rising Voices Alumni Conference that's going to take place on the 23rd and 24th. A little bit of background on how it came about and what people who are attending can expect.
Absolutely. So I've been thinking about planning a conference of this sort really since I got here to Wake 4 years ago. And the same fall that I arrived here, I was invited back to my alma mater for an LGBTQ alumni conference. And I was really, my mind was kind of blown by the idea of bringing back alumni to talk about the work that they're doing in these LGBTQ-related fields. And I thought, wouldn't it be neat to do that at Wake? When I first started talking about it with people, they said, well, sure, you can do something like that at Vassar because you have a million queer alums doing all of this great work, but you could never do something like that at Wake Forest. You wouldn't have anyone to bring. And so I kind of put it on the back burner for a little while, but it was always sort of there percolating. And then over the past few years, as I've had the opportunity to outreach to more and more of our alumni and had the chance to talk to them about their time here, their experiences, and also to start digging around and uncovering pieces of Wake Forest's LGBTQ history, the idea just kept getting bigger and bigger. And I really wanted to create an event that would do a couple of different things. First, to give us an opportunity to explore the experience of being an LGBTQ-identified person at Wake Forest at these different moments in time, right? How is it different in 1982 versus 1992 versus 2015? Also, to create opportunities for our alumni to connect with current students, which I think is hugely important. Our students are hungry for mentorship, for career networking, and really just for opportunity modeling, looking at role models who are living their lives as real live LGBTQ adults, and saying, okay, this could be me. But I also wanted to showcase the work that our alums are doing in LGBTQ-specific fields. And what was really neat and exciting about this is that once I started digging, it turned out that we actually had lots of people doing really great, exciting work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was kind of cool. So the structure of the conference really feeds into these dual goals. Mm-hmm. Our Friday sessions are a teach-in model, really based on what the Humanities Institute did last year with conversations around race in America. Mm-hmm. Responding to that and also opening it up so that in addition to students, we're including faculty and staff in those conversations, which to me felt really important because we have so many faculty and staff members who want this knowledge and want some education on these issues. And we have alums who are doing great work in these various aspects of the field. So the Friday teach-in will pair alumni presenters with faculty co-facilitators who will help to frame the conversation and kind of tie it back to the work that we're doing here at Wake. And the topics for the teach-in sessions range from everything from LGBTQ investigative journalism to the founder of the Gay Christian Network, to an alumna who's written a book on being an African-American transgender woman, to another alum who's talking about LGBTQ rights in an age of post-marriage equality. So it's going to be a really great opportunity for people to get some personal and professional development and to really go in a little bit deeper on some of these topics. Saturday is a more holistic approach to looking at different facets of Wake Forest's LGBTQ experience. The morning and afternoon sessions are all panels, and they all run consecutively so that we'll be moving together as a group from session to session, unlike the teach-ins where people will be selecting different sessions to attend. So on Saturday, we have 4 alumni panels. There's one called Telling Our Stories, which is all alums who are working in media, documentary film, theater arts. And they're going to be talking about the ways in which they use their art and their media to tell stories about LGBTQ lives. We have another panel called Professional Journeys, where different alums ranging from class of 1983 to class of 2014 will talk about their professional journeys, what that looks like, and what it means both to work specifically in LGBTQ-related fields and to work in completely unrelated fields as a queer person. Mm-hmm. In the afternoon, we'll have 2 more panels, one on Wake Forest's LGBTQ history, which I'm really excited about. Mm-hmm. We'll be looking at different moments in the institution's history and having alums who lived through those moments and were here for them talk about them. So we'll look at the founding of the Gay Straight Student Alliance, the first same-sex union to happen in Wake Chapel, and then the election of our first openly gay student body president. So it's some nice moments in time. And then our final alumni panel in the afternoon is our Intersections of Identity panel, where we'll have different alumni talking about the ways in which their multiple and intersecting identities shape their life experiences. In addition to this, we knew that our alums who were coming back were going to want to hear from our students as well. So we've created opportunities throughout the conference to connect alums with our current students, both through a student ambassadors program that will allow the students to reach out to alums before they even get here to connect with them, and through a student panel that will happen over lunch on Saturday, where the students will talk about their experiences at Wake and what life looks like here now.
And just in going back, you were talking about the one teach-in in particular, talking about a post-marriage equality society. And so I think that marriage equality is one of the issues that's received a lot of attention in the media. What are some other LGBTQ issues that you think deserve as much attention as we move forward?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, the funny thing about the situation we've gotten ourselves into nationally now is that in 34 states, including North Carolina, you can marry your same-sex partner anytime and anywhere you want, and then you can go into work the next day and put a picture of the two of you up in your desk and legally be fired for being gay, right? So when we start to think about employment non-discrimination in public accommodation, this is hugely important, right? For both lesbian, gay, bisexual people, and for transgender people as well. We also have an absolute crisis in terms of access to healthcare and health disparities for LGBTQ populations. Transgender people in particular are systematically being cut off from access to the healthcare they need. And the Affordable Care Act has made some progress in trying to get care to as many people as possible, but still doesn't provide provisions to actually cover the care that a lot of trans people need in order to be healthy.
In talking about specifically transgender issues, recently actress and activist Laverne Cox appeared, and you did the intro for her talk at Wake. Wake Chapel was filled, just a great response. So an event like that, an event like Rising Voices, do you see those events happening more frequently on campus, and do you see them reflecting changes in the campus climate?
I think they absolutely reflect changes in the campus climate. I hope to never plan 2 of them in the same month again. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think what was really exciting to me about the Laverne Cox event was that we had an event where, yeah, we filled Wake Chapel, and for one night, Wake Forest became the place that transgender people from all over North Carolina drove to our campus, waited in line for hours outside of Wake Chapel, and we were able to offer this to the community. You know, like, yes, we are an engaged community partner bringing this important voice to all of you. Simultaneously, we had all of these students in the room who, many of whom probably had never thought about transgender issues before, but were so excited to see a famous, you know, TV star that they came and got an amazing education.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So to me, that event was really the best of both worlds. I really see Wake Forest moving into a new era of openness, of inclusiveness, and of being able to celebrate all of the different aspects of our identities. One of the things I've been saying a lot about this conference is it's really amazing to have an opportunity to welcome people back because of, not in spite of, their sexual orientation or gender identity.
What are some other ways that faculty, staff, and students can become involved at the LGBTQ Center? What are other opportunities?
Absolutely. So we try to create a number of opportunities throughout the year so that people can kind of step in at places that match their interest level and their comfort level. One thing that we do that I think is a great opportunity for folks who maybe identify as allies to some piece of the LGBTQ community but haven't thought about how to make that an actionable identity is our Safe Zone training. Safe Zone training is a training we offer once a month. It's a 3.5-hour workshop, and it's part LGBTQ 101. What do all those letters mean? What's the difference between sexual orientation and gender identity? But it's also skills building. How do I recognize not just homophobia, but heterosexism when it's operating in my environment? What are steps that I personally can take to make a more inclusive climate in my office, in my residence hall, on my sports team, in my classroom? And we also do weekly drop-in coffee hours. Mm-hmm. We'll have social events that are a great way for both students who may want to meet some people and be looking for community but not feel like they're ready to kind of engage in a formal program to come in and have a cup of coffee and a cookie and meet some people. As well as, you know, we're always bringing in speakers and films and that sort of thing. We're planning a film series for the spring that I think will be really exciting.
Fantastic. Yeah. Do you know what you're, just not to give away any surprises, but do you know what you'll be featuring?
We are still working out the details, but one partnership that we're really excited about is working with the Elder Law Clinic to bring the film Generation Silent to campus, which is about the lives and experiences of LGBTQ elders.
Mm-hmm. And you also do the Lavender
graduation. Yes, yes. And we have Lavender Graduation, which is our spring signature event that honors our LGBTQ and ally graduates who have contributed in some way to the campus community over the past 4 years, or just self-identify as LGBTQ or an ally and want to be honored in the ceremony. It's a really beautiful event, and I think very meaningful for the students who participate. We've had about 20 graduates participate in the past 2 years, and we always pack the ZSR auditorium, which is kind of fun.
Do you mind talking with me about your background?
Sure.
And sort of how you came to Wake and what you work on academically?
Yeah, so it's funny. I was just talking to a student the other day, a former student who wanted some career path mentorship, and she said, so how did you become an LGBTQ Center director? And I think she expected, you know, a sort of linear, well, I went to school and got a degree in this, and then I became an LGBTQ Center director. And my own personal professional journey has been so circuitous. But I have a PhD in American Studies from Brown, and when I got to Brown, I was really interested in thinking about public history in sort of narrative storytelling, in how feminist and queer communities had used these tools of oral histories to tell stories and to create senses of community about themselves. But I also realized fairly quickly, fairly early on in my graduate education, that I had no interest in becoming a tenure track faculty member. I loved talking to people. I loved teaching. I loved sort of the creative building process involved in a lot of academic work, but I had no interest in trying to, I mean, even secure a tenure track job, let alone fight my way up the tenure ladder. And so I was pretty intentional throughout my graduate career about cultivating other experiences. So while I was at Brown, in addition to, you know, writing a dissertation and getting a PhD, I also worked for the Women's Center. Mm-hmm. I was the first coordinator at their LGBTQ center. I served on the diversity advisory board. I was on the board of a small foundation that did LGBTQ grant making. So I had a lot of opportunity to think about other ways of creating infrastructure and frameworks for inclusive community. And when I finished my PhD, I spent a year working in federal government, and I always imagine my obituary someday, you know, this sentence. In addition, Mazur spent an idiosyncratic year working for the Internal Revenue Service in 2010, which is true. I did, in fact, spend a year working for the Internal Revenue Service, which was the weirdest year of my life. But I worked in their diversity office, and I thought that being really passionate about diversity and inclusion would make this a great fit. And what I realized really quickly, and this is a no-brainer to anyone who does diversity work, is that if you don't connect with and feel a passion for the mission of the organization that you're working for, you really can't do effective diversity and inclusion work. And so it was a very rough year professionally and personally. And when the opportunity to come to Wake and found the LGBTQ Center arose, I was so excited to come here and get to do this. Mm-hmm. It was really a dream come true to be given carte blanche and, you know, especially in a place where no one had been doing this work before, and to have someone say, here, you're the expert, just build it. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of how I ended up here. In addition to all of this, I do still do oral history projects and public history projects. I teach a class called Queer Public Histories, where we use the lens of LGBTQ history to look at different public history methods. Mm-hmm. And so while our alumni are here for the Rising Voices Conference, my students will actually be conducting oral histories with them. And those will get incorporated both into an archive in the library, and they'll use the content from them to create an exhibit that will go up in the library.
Excellent.
Being the LGBTQ Center director, I'm also a public historian, mm-hmm. and I am really interested in how queer communities have used different public history methods, whether it's doing oral history projects, creating archives, curating exhibits, to both tell a story about their own past and to claim a sense of identity in the present. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I'm working on that will hopefully come out of the oral histories that we're doing for this conference, and more that I hope to do in the future, is a book project about Wake Forest LGBTQ history, which is really exciting.
Yeah, that's very exciting. I will definitely look forward to that.
Me too.
Yeah, since you founded the center, you know, what were some of the challenging aspects of that process?
Well, I think the thing that was both a blessing and a challenge was that there had been absolutely no institutional support around LGBTQ issues here in the past. You know, even when I was at Brown and they were founding an LGBTQ center, there was a lot of strong institutional knowledge there about what this work should look like. And when I got here, there really wasn't. So I kind of had to make it all up as I went along. And obviously, you know, I was looking at best practices and calling on other centers and, you know, looking at the models that already exist out there. But in figuring out how to take all of those and turn them into something that made sense here for this particular community really took a lot of creative thinking and at times problem solving. Mm-hmm. For the first year, just getting students into the LGBTQ center felt impossible. Mm-hmm. And I remember meeting with a colleague from another center at one point and saying, I don't know what to do. The faculty and staff come talk to me and they want to do this work. They want to be allies, but I can't get the students in the door.
Right.
And she said, just wait, they'll come. And the thing that was really the tipping point for us with getting students in the door were t-shirts.
Yeah.
Of all things,
uh-huh.
you know, our Love is Love t-shirts,
yep.
mm-hmm. Which when we printed them, we printed 500 of them and didn't put the year on them because we thought, well, we can use these for a couple years,
right?
They'll last us for a while. And
they were gone
in 48 hours.
Yeah, that's great.
And it was this moment when I just remember looking with disbelief at having a line of people out the door of the LGBTQ center, mm-hmm. coming to get these shirts and thinking, oh,
yeah.
I just found a way mm-hmm. to get to our students.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So, you know, I would say that probably the biggest challenge has been building something without any sort of blueprint and without a whole lot of guidance mm-hmm. from other folks about what I should be doing and what the needs are.
Yeah.
I also really enjoy strategic planning and creative building processes. Yeah. So it was a challenge, but also a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah,
really,
my pleasure.
That was Angela Mazarus, director of the Wake Forest University LGBTQ Center. Don't forget to register for the Rising Voices Conference. Visit lgbtq.wfu.edu/risingvoices for more information and a link to the registration page. Registration includes admission to all conference sessions, refreshments at the Friday evening reception, breakfast, lunch, and dinner on Saturday, and a Love is Love t-shirt. Registration is $40 for Wake Forest alumni and guests, and free for current Wake Forest students, faculty, and staff. As always, you can listen to this and all other episodes of Humanities Viewpoints by going to humanitiesinstitute.wfu.edu/podcast or find us on iTunes. Thanks for listening.